You're listening to Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Into hour two on this Monday, April 22nd. Logan Gordon along with you. Sportsnet Today in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems Downtown Studios. Hour one for all things NHL postseason as we head into night three. A recap of the weekend that was and a look at tonight's matchups with our pal Greg Wyshynski, senior writer from ESPN, who joined us. If you missed any of it, make sure to check us out on the podcast. It'll be up on the Hour One pod, wherever you get your favorite podcast. Make sure you check us out if you can't catch the show live. We'll remind you quickly before the show is done what the schedule looks like for tonight in the NHL and see if we've got any more injury updates to pass your way. It all kicks off, of course, with the Leafs and the Bruins Monday night at 5 o'clock. Still to come, we'll get you set with the rest of the schedule for the Toronto Blue Jays as well this week. They're kicking off the series with the Royals, and we'll jump into that in just a second. But a quick reminder, we're in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems Downtown Studios, your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement. You visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com. Greg, Shan, and Cam along with us on this Monday. Fan feedback line open to you at 960-960. We'll get into that a little bit later as well. But right now, very happy to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Kickoff hour two. Our pal Shoa Ali joins us to talk some Blue Jays baseball from Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. What's up, Sho? How you doing, pal?
Good, Logan. What did Wyshynski have to say about my beloved Maple Leafs? Will they win a hockey game this postseason?
I'll be honest with you, it wasn't a lot of positives. As I'm sure you're well aware.
Yeah, so that sounds about right, I think.
Yeah, hey, I appreciate the excitement, and I appreciate loving to see the fans rocking out in Toronto. That was a bit of a tough start on the weekend for the Maple Leafs.
It was nice that I had to do Jays talk and not Leafs talk. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, didn't want to switch roles for the night on that one.
Absolutely not. No chance.
Yeah, I was gonna make a snide remark coming in about, well, one team's winning right now in Toronto, and it's the Jays. It was just too easy, and I couldn't do it. But the Jays have been playing some good baseball. So I know they're coming off of a loss in the end of that series with the Padres. But as far as series wins go, it's been good news for the Jays of late.
Yeah, four straight series wins, and you're right. I mean, anytime you lose a game, it's kind of hard to find like a lot of moral victories. But I mean, you go out west and you beat up on the Padres in two straight games, and I mean, I've always said it's hard to sweep any team, like even the worst teams in Major League Baseball. It is hard to sweep them. So that they were able to win two or three. And in relatively, I know they won 5-1 and 5-2, so it's not like they're winning like 16-4 or something like that, but they were able to put up runs against starting pitchers early in games. Dalton Varsho was able to stay hot. The bullpen in both of those first two games were able to lock up things in dominant fashion. And unfortunately, the shortness of the bullpen after using Jimmy Garcia and Jordan Romano and so on in the first couple games did mean it was a little thin yesterday, but I've been generally impressed. The funny thing is, and you and I had these conversations last year, it is a very similar team to last year. So a lot of the things we talked about last year will still be true this year, just with a couple of different names here.
How big has it been for the rotation to be as dominant as they have been? I believe I was reading Shai's article after the game last night on Sportsnet.ca, and it was 10 of the past 12 games for the Jays. Their starters have allowed one run or less. And you mentioned Chris Bassitt. You know, four runs, three of them earned, but still five and a third of innings pitched against the Padres. Like, we were, I think a lot of us, myself included, curious if this rotation could perform anywhere near to the standard they put up last year. And so far, so good, Show.
Yeah, I mean, the first turn through the rotation was a little worrying because a lot of the guys outside of Jose Berríos got knocked around a little bit. Like, Gausman got knocked around, Bassitt got knocked around, Kikuchi had a couple of walks, a little more walk issues, but then all of them, basically all of them, have played much better since then. Gausman, I think you can understand giving a little bit of a pass to because he had the abbreviated spring. So I don't think there was a lot of worry across Canada about what Gausman would look like. And his last time out, he looked pretty normal as well. So, yeah, it's true. And Bassett, I mean, 5 1/3 from Bassett is still nothing to scoff at. I know it's just he went 6 1/3, 6 2/3 the last couple times out prior to yesterday. But he basically, and I know he didn't mean this as an excuse, but that he was pitching with a sinus infection, and it's like an infection that's going around the whole team, that they were able to play as well as they had been throughout the last week or so, I think does show that they are still playing pretty well. And, yeah, the walks bit Bassett a little bit yesterday, but I don't know. There were also some really wonky plays. Like in the very first inning, George Springer misplays a ball that he probably never misplays if you replay that moment in time, like 99 out of 100 times. So no, I'm not ultimately that all that worried. And I mean, Kikuchi plays tonight, and Kikuchi has also been lights out. The guy's been absolutely nasty for most of the season. So you're right. It's great that they can recapture the form from last year, because I honestly thought there would be some regression just like statistically, but so far they've looked pretty good. You're right.
I loved the quote from Mark Buczynski, who is in charge of with the Jays and how they're handling base running. And the message to the players that he sent out was running the bases aggressively but intelligently. And I can't help but feel like that's been important to the Jays these last couple series show, where runs have still been at a premium, but you can help yourself out with smart base running. And we've seen that from IKF. I know Bo Bichette got caught on Sunday. But, you know, they've converted, I think, 14 of 17 this year, which is well ahead of where they were last year. And I can't help but think that's an encouraging sign for the Jays, who, if the bats aren't always going at 100%, can still help themselves with some of these guys on the base running. And I can't think of, you know, Bichette's part of that group, IKF, even Dalton Varsho, who can do the little things on the base pass that can help this team score runs.
Yeah, it's true. You mentioned Varsho, and Varsho is one of those guys who I'm looking for a little bit more for that. And not that he's done it poorly. It's just he hasn't tried to steal a lot of bases, and he's a pretty fast guy. It's funny because when you and I had these conversations last year, Whit Merrifield was a big part of these conversations, right?
Yes.
Like, this is a guy who, when he got on base, no matter who was on the mound, Merrifield was one of those guys who would always cause some kind of chaos on the base paths and just put some doubt in the back of the pitcher's mind. And when he left, I kind of wondered to myself, who would be that guy? Like, who could go and cause the pitchers some havoc on the base paths? And Varsho, I think, can absolutely be that guy. You mentioned IKF as well, Logan, and IKF I've been very impressed by in limited play all over the diamond, really. He's been at second, he's been at third. I think he's been moved when defensive replacements have come into the outfield a handful of times. But, I mean, there was a play, I think, in this series against the Padres where IKF got over to third base and then a ball got away from the catcher at home plate. And IKF had already had a nice break as the ball was being delivered. He already had a nice break towards home. And the ball didn't even get away from, I think it was Luis Camposano, the catcher at the time. It didn't get away from him that much. Like, it's not like the ball sprayed so far towards the dugout that there was no chance of making a play. But IKF had such a great read on that ball. He scored. And it's those very little things that do matter. You even see it kind of from some of the older guys. Like, Justin Turner has had a decent base running, no base running gaps, let's put it that way.
Exactly. Yep.
He's been pretty good at it so far for a guy who's 39 years old. And, you know, Bo Bichette, you're right, he got caught stealing, but he's been playing okay. Vladdy has been playing okay. So you're right. I mean, they seem to have settled down, because that was something that had raised the eyebrows in the spring, because it was a little sloppy in spring training, but not so much in the regular season.
And I don't know where you are on this, but as long as I've watched baseball, I've always thought of, and I have no idea, and I'd have to talk to, you know, a pitcher with real-world experience in the majors, but I always got to think that plays into the pitcher, especially now with the pitch clock show, you know, just having that idea in the back of their mind that they've got to be ready for those guys when they're on the base pass. Just one more thing for them to go through their progression. I've always been a believer in that, and I've always wanted the Jays to do more of it. I'm curious if it's just in my head, or if that's something the pitchers actually find difficult, knowing that they've got guys being aggressive out there on the base paths.
You know, I think I noticed it more this year, and you saw a little bit last year with the new rules. But you know how there's that rule where you can't disengage and throw up, make a pickoff move to a particular base. You can only do it like certain amount of times in a particular AB. And so if you disengage more than twice, the next time you disengage, if you don't get the out at the base you're throwing to, the runner gets 90 feet essentially, right? And I've seen it. I don't know if I've just been more aware of it this year. And again, it happened last year too, but now you're seeing it more, and I can't help but think that it's because these pitchers are aware that these guys are on base and are trying to screw with their timing essentially, right? So I like that rule change, and I like that the Blue Jays are trying to instill that fear a little bit more. And I can't help but think they could do it. They could stand to do it a little bit more, even if it does mean they get caught stealing a couple more times. You know, send a guy, maybe give them the signs a couple more times a game. It doesn't have to happen all the time, and it probably only can happen with certain guys. Like, you're not going to do it with Justin Turner a lot of the times, but you might do it with IKF or Kiermaier, for example, who's pretty speedy, or even Kevin Biggio, for example, when he does play. And I mean, who knows? Maybe you can get some more of that production out of guys like David Schneider and Ernie Clement, because they've played pretty well. They're relatively young. They're maybe not the fastest guys in the world, but I think I'd rather have them take their chances than, you know, Vladdy or Turner or Kirk, for example, right?
Checking in on a couple of pitchers for the Jays over the weekend. If listeners missed it, Mitch White traded to the San Francisco Giants in exchange for cash considerations. It just never worked in his tenure for the Jays, and with a couple of guys set to come back, I think this move made a lot of sense for the Jays. It's just too bad they couldn't get more value. There was an interesting prospect there, I thought, in Mitch White's show, but it just never showed in Toronto.
Yeah, it's true. And again, I guess with Romano and Swanson coming back, they kind of had a bit of a roster crunch. And I mean, I guess they could have tried to keep Mitch White and sent down Bowden Francis, but it did kind of feel like his time had come. And I think there was some hope in this spring that he was locating a little better. He was throwing the ball a little harder. The ball was in the upper 90s, and you kind of thought, okay, well, that plays. Like high 90s fastball plays no matter who you are in the majors, probably would have extended his career by a little bit. And then the couple of times he came in the majors, you just never really saw that. Like, it wasn't really the command. It was the exact same version of Mitch White you saw last year, which I thought was so baffling because you saw such a different Mitch White in the spring. So I guess with the roster crunch, with Romano and Swanson on the return, they still had Pearson who can throw a high velo, and things did not look that great for Pearson yesterday, admittedly, but they clearly felt it was easier to roll the dice on someone like Pearson than White. But yeah, it's tough. It's too bad they couldn't get more for him. You're right. But I guess his time had come to an end. I am curious what his role will look like for the Giants, though, because they have a fairly large bullpen when it comes to prospects and high throwing, you know, guys in the starting rotation as well. So I'm not really sure what his role will be out in San Francisco, but I do hope he finds some playing time.
Yeah, going to be interesting to see for sure, because just 29, he's thrown, like you mentioned, he's had some moments, but just not enough of them to keep him in Toronto right now. And of course, still paying attention to Alek Manoah, another outing for him in AAA. This time gets 92 pitches and just allows 2 runs over 5 2/3 innings in his latest start out there. How much attention is being paid in Toronto to this sort of rehabilitation process with Alek Manoah, and how encouraging was this last step here, show?
Oh, I think it was great, I think, for him. It was a genuinely encouraging step for me because I watched a little bit of his start, and you mentioned the 2 earned runs. He gave up all 2 earned runs on a single home run in the first inning of that outing, right? So he basically, after he got out of that first bottom of the first inning, he basically did not give up an earned run for the rest of his outing. And I think he allowed, I think it was 6 hits, I want to say. So if it was 6 hits, he essentially only allowed, after the bottom of the first inning, no runs and 3 hits for the rest of his day. And the one thing I was really looking forward to seeing was velo for sure, but command and no walks for Manoah. I don't believe he hit any batters, which has been a bit of a bugaboo for Manoah as well. And the nice thing was not only was his command there, he was dotting the strike zone with most of his pitches, but he also managed to get that slider of his over for strikeouts. And you and I talked about him last year, but Manoah's slider is his put-away pitch, right? And you want to see him able to actually get guys with that slider. And I think it was the last K of the day for Manoah, but he got a guy, and he was swinging. Like, he looked so silly, and Manoah got him with the back foot slider. It looked filthy. So it's nice to see Manoah get back to a point where he's looking more like, quote-unquote, himself. obviously it's not at a point where he can just say, like, all right, well, time to bring him back up to the majors, right? They still have they had the 30-day window to make their decisions, which is why you often see Manoah with the team in between his rehab starts, because he's using the major league facilities, he's using the major league resources, like the coaches and so on, available to him. But once that 30-day window closes, I kind of wonder if he doesn't stay with the Bisons for another, like, what would be the equivalent of, like, two, three starts, maybe, before you have that decision to bring him back up to the majors. Because and the nice thing is, as long as Yariel Rodriguez and Bowden Francis are both pitching well in tandem for that fifth spot, you don't really need to rush him back up, which is a nice place for the Blue Jays to be right now.
Shoal Ali along with us from Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. Blue Jays pregame coverage among many different hats that Shoal wears at Sportsnet 590. Getting set for the Jays and, of course, the Kansas City Royals tonight. It's a 5:40 first pitch out here in Calgary on Sportsnet 1. And, yes, Yusei Kikuchi gets the start for the Jays. Big four-game series against a good start to the season for the Royals. And interesting, Kikuchi doesn't have a lot of career success against the Royals, just 1-2 with a 6.37 ERA. But the way he's going now and the way that curveball's going, you got to feel good. Remember when that first season didn't go so well for Yusei Kikuchi? Show how long ago that feels like for this guy?
It's true. Yeah, that was, I mean, that people were ready to DFA Kikuchi after like a month, essentially, right? And he pitched so well last year. And, you know, the biggest change year over year for Kikuchi was, how is he going to cut down on all those walks? And then he did. And he also kind of cut down on a lot of the strikeouts. This is true. But, I mean, if you look at one of the things that really frustrated me about Kikuchi in his first year was that he just never seemed to use his fastball when he really needed it to. And Kikuchi can throw, like, if you were to make a list of the hardest throwing lefty starting members of rotations in maybe all of baseball, not even in the American League, in the entirety of the Major League Baseball, you probably put in Kikuchi like top three, probably, like in terms of how hard a lefty can throw a fastball. And he just never really seemed to use it. Last year, he leaned into it a little bit more. The pitch mix seemed to look a little bit better. And that's kept up this year as well. He did have a bit of an issue in game one of the season. But you're right, he's mixing in a lot of other pitches as well. I'm curious to see, like you said, Logan, doesn't have a lot of success against the Royals career-wise. I am curious to see, especially with the Royals having such a young team, because it's not just we can look at the splits of Kikuchi against like Salvador Perez, who's been in Major League Baseball for ages, but I mean, not so much for guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny Pascantino and Michael Garcia and so on, right? So I am curious to see how he acquits himself, but I still think because he has that lethal fastball that makes all of his pitches play so well off of it, I can't wait to see what he's got tonight. But he's got to be careful, because all those guys I just mentioned, especially Bobby Witt Jr., I mean, Witt has basically taken the turn to being a superstar. So you can't be sloppy and walk guys to bring up Witt to the plate. So I have confidence with Kikuchi, but he's got to be careful today.
And the last guy I wanted to talk to you about, we did talk about him a bit when it came to the discussion we having about base running. But, I mean, Dalton Varsho at the plate deserves a lot of credit. He's got 10 of Toronto's 35 runs in their past 8 games, 5 homers, 11 RBIs in his past 9. And I don't know if that pace is at all sustainable for him, Show, but to continue to be a threat at the plate offensively, it just adds another dimension to this Jays lineup. And I just feel like overall a lot better balanced when he's a contributor at the plate regularly.
Yeah, his batting stance looks a little different these days. Like, he's standing up a little straighter. He's putting his shoulder forward when he swings. It just he looks so much more comfortable at the plate. And, yeah, I mean, you're right. He's not going to have, like, an OPS of, like, 1,300 for the whole year. That would be tremendous, honestly.
That'd be nice, yeah.
Yeah, that would be really nice. I would absolutely take it. But you're right. I mean, even if we get, like, 75% of what you're getting from Dalton Varsho going forward, I think you'll be pretty happy, because his value – will always be buoyed a little bit by his glove, right? I mean, this is a guy who can, even if he's in left or in center, probably is a gold glove caliber player. So if you're always going to get that kind of defensive work from Varsho, any offensive production more than you got last year, you'll absolutely take it. And this is a guy who has hit 27 home runs in the major leagues before, so it's not as though he's incapable of doing it. He does look a lot more comfortable. He had a 3-hit night just a couple days ago. He sprinkled in a stolen base. One of those 3 hits was a mammoth 3-run jack. He had the 2-home run game at the end of the series against, I guess it was the Yankees. But, yeah, no, it was his play offensively has looked so much more steady and comfortable. He doesn't seem to be really pressing. So if he's able to continue to do that, and again, I mean, you talked about the Royals. The Royals are, I think the Blue Jays are going to see all but one of their best pitchers, essentially, in this four-game set. So the Blue Jays offense has to step it up a little bit, but a big part of that in the last 10 days, essentially, has been Dalton Varsho. So I hope he keeps it up because he's been really exciting to watch.
It's been a great story for the Blue Jays, who are looking to win a series for the fifth straight time and hopefully continue making up some ground in the AL playoff picture. So always appreciate the time, my man. We'll check in again soon, hey?
Yeah, anytime, Logan.
Thanks, pal. Appreciate it. Shoaib Ali joining us from Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. Yes, mixed in with some playoff hockey. Blue Jays baseball continues. They're a 5:40 start Calgary time in Kansas City to take on the Royals for a four-game set. They're back home to take on the Dodgers and the Royals back in Toronto this time next week. But for tonight, it's Yusei Kikuchi getting the start for the Toronto Blue Jays in four games, 1-1 record with a 2.08 ERA. And Royals going to counter with Brady Singer. He's off to a great start this year. 2-0 record, 1.54 ERA for Singer. Blue Jays 12-10 on the season, while the Royals coming in second in the Central Division, 13-9. Take a break. Come back on the other side. We'll get you set for game night three in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and also take a look at some Flames news. Wranglers more, but Flames news heading ahead of their weekend series. First playoff round for the Wranglers coming up against the Tucson Roadrunners. That as Sportsnet Today continues next here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. All right, putting a wrap on the show on this Monday, April 22nd. Four Stanley Cup playoff matchups on deck tonight. Leafs and Bruins first up. Still no word on William Nylander. Will he or won't he? Doesn't look like it. Still participating with the extras and scratches at practice. Could be an injury stemming from game 82 of the season. Elliot Friedman still not 100% certain. Didn't want to go too far when he joined Jeff Merrick on the Jeff Merrick Show earlier today on Sportsnet 960. So mystery abound, but sure would be a big one for the Leafs if they don't have Nylander. And potentially staring down a 2-0 hole heading back to Toronto. Bruins did not announce a starting goaltender. Could be Jeremy Swayman, could be Linus Allmark ahead of tonight's matchup. So we'll keep an eye on that. Also, news out of Edmonton, Evander Kane expected to play in game one of their the Oilers' opening round series against the Kings. Head coach Chris Nombos said everyone's healthy and ready to go. Kane with 44 points in 77 games. This season, he was dealing with a bit of a sports hernia over the weekend, but he's good to go for the New York Islanders. Can tell you, Jean-Gabriel Pageau participated in morning skate and is listed as likely to play for the Islanders as they get set for game two against the Carolina Hurricanes. They lost 3-1 on Saturday. He has been dealing with a lower body injury, so he'll be back, and the Kings expecting to have Carl Grundstrom back from a lower body injury as they get set to take on the Oilers tonight. Of course, important bottom six piece for the Kings as they kick off that series against McDavid and the Oilers. Only other injury news we can tell you, Capitals, they don't play against the Rangers until Tuesday, but Rasmus Sandin and Nick Jensen wearing non-contact jerseys at an optional practice Monday. Head coach Spencer Carberry saying they are both, quote, possibilities for game two of their final of their conference first round against the Rangers on Tuesday. That one, both defensemen out for game one because of upper body injuries. Of course, Rangers lead that series 4-1, or excuse me, they lead the series 1-0. It might be 4-1 when the series is done. They won game one by a 4-1 count. So that's the latest injury news on this Monday. Again, ahead of four games on the Stanley Cup playoff outlook. Shan, you're getting a set for one of those games tonight, aren't you?
I am. What, I am getting a set.
What game do we have on the Mighty 960 tonight?
We've got the Edmonton Oilers. Edmonton Oilers and the LA Kings. That's I mean, it's something we've seen a couple years in a row here, third year in a row for this, I want to say, poor Kings team. I think at the end of the day...
They haven't been wiped out, let's be honest.
No.
They've put up a fight.
I completely agree. The problem is that it doesn't matter how good the rest of the team is. You're playing against Connor McDavid every single day in a playoff series where there's no limitations on how hard that guy can play because he hasn't won a cup, and it's getting very clear in up north that this team needs to show that they can win a cup pretty quick here. I don't want to say their window is closing, but at the same time, you know, we don't know what happens with McDavid's contract and Drysdale's contract. So I think this is the year you're going to see a very terrifying Oilers squad, and especially those two big boys up front.
Sticking with hockey, just some of the AHL variety can tell you that the Wranglers continue to add Flames prospects to their roster. This time it's Hunter Brustevich. His season over in the Ontario Hockey League. He's going to join the team on an ATO, and he's heading to Arizona to join the team in Tucson. The Calgary Wranglers set for series opening matchup against the Tucson Roadrunners coming up later this week. We'll have all of the coverage for you here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, Sandra Priscina, with the Wranglers in Tucson for games Wednesday and Friday and potentially Sunday. It's an opening round best of three for the Wranglers and the Tucson Roadrunners. Wranglers, the lower seed, so they are on the road for all three possible games. All of them 8 o'clock starts, all of them right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Can't imagine Brustevich jumps into the lineup for the Wranglers with his first taste of pro hockey. We'll wait and see. They got a lot of bodies right now for the Wranglers, who finished up a series with Abbotsford on the weekend and are getting set for this round one matchup. They got a lot of reinforcements. Solovyov, Coronado, Wolf, all back with the team for this opening round set with Tucson. But like I said, they are the lower seed heading into this, and it's a quick three-game series, so we'll see what happens. But all the coverage right here, Sandra Priscina on the call for every game on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Other sport news, it is NFL Draft Week. The draft coming up a little bit later on, and we're expecting to see plenty of action once the draft gets underway. But we have a trade in the NFL to tell you about involving a team with a pretty high pick and a former high pick as well. Zach Wilson, the former to-be franchise quarterback of the New York Jets, has been traded. He's a 2021 second overall pick. He's been traded to the Denver Broncos on Monday, this coming from the NFL Network. They're going to swap a sixth rounder and a seventh rounder in the draft. So the Jets moving Zach Wilson and his money out. They're going to split the money on his final year of his contract after three disappointing seasons in New York. Came with massive expectations after being selected out of BYU, but just never able to get it going. They couldn't get it done in Aaron Rodgers' absence after he tore his left Achilles four snaps into his Jets career. And now Zach Wilson headed to Denver. We'll see if the Broncos, one of the teams that could be after a quarterback in the NFL draft this week. But we'll wait and see if exactly this changes their plans. It's kind of a mishmash of quarterbacks in Denver right now. I don't know if Zach Wilson is a project, if they're going to go out and get a quarterback, maybe build around somebody there. But the Broncos now have a quarterback room of Zach Wilson, Jarrett Stidham, and Ben DiNucci after they released Russell Wilson last year after 2 months with the Broncos. They hold the 12th overall pick in this week's NFL draft. So that's the latest from the NFL. Shane, you're a big Zach Wilson guy, aren't you?
That's one way to put it.
Guy.
That's one way to put it. I wouldn't say I'm actually that big on Zach Wilson, as I don't think anybody can be. He did not get a whole lot. I mean, okay, he got a shot in New York for sure. But at the same time, he was just their guy. It's like, all right, you can play for a little bit, but we are going to find someone better. And then if they get hurt, which somehow happened every time, you'll be back and everything's fine and we love you. But we're actually just going to treat you very poorly. So I don't know. It was ugly in New York. I don't think he's going to go to Denver and all of a sudden light it up. He's not bad. He's not good. He's just one of those I'll call him a filler quarterback, if that makes sense. But, you know, like you talked about, there's about 1,000 quarterbacks in this draft, and it seems like zero running backs and a few receivers. So we're always going to see the O-linemen go pretty high up, and then just a bunch of quarterbacks in the first round.
I could also tell you a quarterback that did have a successful NFL career. Congratulations, Matt Ryan. He announced his retirement from football on this Monday. He turns 39 in the next month. He threw for over 62,000 yards as an NFL quarterback, mostly the face of the Falcons. Of course, a Super Bowl champion. He ranks 7th in NFL history for passing yards, 9th in career touchdown passes, and was the league MVP in what year, Shan?
2014.
Not bad. 2016.
Duh!
2016. And yes, I was wrong. Super Bowl appearance.
Yeah, I was
for Matty Ice.
I mean, it should have been.
They lost that one.
Well, how did they lose?
You would never believe it.
They were up 28-3.
Yeah, you'll never believe
it. I turned it off.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me they lost that year?
They did.
They were up 28-3.
Yep. They did.
What?
Yeah, they lost that one.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's tough.
How is that even possible?
Yeah.
It was like the third quarter.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was pretty late in the game.
I know it's Tom Brady over there, but all you got to do is like get a field goal.
Not great.
Huh. Poor guy.
Do you know what his
retirement?
Guess what his record would be as a starter?
How many games?
A lot.
Well, yeah. I don't even know. Like, I'm going to guess he had 200 wins.
No.
That's too much, right?
Yeah. It's a lot.
I'm going to go with 112 wins.
That's better.
Yeah.
124, 109, and 1.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad. Really. Hall of Famer? Hall of Famer? Hall of Famer?
It's definitely in Atlanta. I think he's on the fringe. I don't know. I don't even know if I can answer that. Yes.
7th in passing yards, 9th in touchdowns.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And an MVP.
Obviously, if they won the Super Bowl, which, first of all, I thought they did. If they won the Super Bowl that year, I don't think it's any question. It's just that's such a stain on the legacy that I know is not really totally his fault. It's just...
Oh, it didn't help.
No, it didn't help that you didn't score for however long. I don't know. It's... Yeah, I guess you call him a Hall of Famer, but you could also make the argument that...
I don't know that he'd be a first ballot.
No.
I'll say that. Good quarterback, though.
I would have liked
that. Better than Zach Wilson.
Yeah, that's a good analysis.
960-960 text line open to you. This text says, so the Broncos are a mess. So much praise for Sean Payton and three nobodies they have now that aren't any better than Russell Wilson.
That's a lot of money for Sean Payton too.
I mean, they're gonna draft a quarterback, right?
They have to.
Is that quarterback better than Zach Wilson is now? Like at 12. 4 or 5 quarterbacks could be off the board if you don't. Is it going to get like Bo Nix? Second round? Is that the future of the quarterback situation in Denver?
I think picking a guy like Bo Nix makes a bit of sense because that guy has been in college for what seems like 10 years. So having a guy that's ready to play NFL ball rather than a project may be more important, but I don't know. Like, I just feel like Zach Wilson is kind of getting screwed over again here. It's like, hey, you'll be our guy for a little bit, but then we're going to have someone younger and better come up. And then you're back to wherever you want to go, I guess. It's hard to feel bad for him. It's not like he's done anything to make him. I mean, he had like a 4-game stretch, Zach Wilson did, where it's like, oh my God, this guy's incredible. And then it fell apart. That was after he was flirting with someone's mom, right? Is that a true story?
I wouldn't know.
No.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure that's a true story.
I know that there's a reputation.
Yeah.
Of liking older women.
Maybe that's what.
And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe he'll find the scene in Denver. Maybe he'll get going again.
Lock up your moms.
Yeah.
Zach Wilson.
If you live in the Denver area, Zach Wilson is coming to your town.
That feels like enough of that.
Yeah, probably.
I can't substantiate that rumor.
No. I just, like. Denver, and first of all, are we going to talk about their jerseys? I know it's not exactly a very easy thing to do on radio.
It's hard on radio.
They're ugly.
They're okay.
They're not great.
Better than they were.
That I don't agree with.
That's unequivocally true.
See, you're right. This doesn't work on radio.
No. Can't argue about, hey, do you like what we see? You can't. You only hear about.
And you're wrong.
You're wrong. This text says, are the Flames licking their chops if and when a top team bows out in the first round that potentially needs a goalie? Could that intensify further options for Markey if he would accept to those locations? I mean, if you're the Calgary Flames and you are indeed still shopping Jacob Markstrom, I don't know why you wouldn't be encouraged by what's happened in the playoffs so far. I mean, I can think of, at least three teams off the top of my head that would be improved in my mind with Markstrom there. That's Colorado would be, I think Toronto would be, I think LA would
LA
be.
LA for sure, yeah.
Islanders probably. I mean, Carolina, maybe. They've got like eight guys, so.
This is one thing.
Who knows? But yeah, I mean, look, that's the one thing that if you're the Flames and you are still shopping Jacob Markstrom in the offseason, yeah, the playoffs can have that effect. And if it's a goaltending conversation specifically, I mean, if you're the Colorado Avalanche and Georgiev does hold you back from this series with the Jets and you're the Flames and you go, you can have Jacob Markstrom at 2 years and we'll eat half the salary. So he's at $3 million on a cap hit the next 2 years. So you can still build out your roster with all these star players. I would pay a pretty reasonable price if I was Colorado to have that happen.
The only problem is they have like 1,000 UFAs. Colorado does. A lot of them, to be fair, in their bottom six. But like we've seen what happens with Jonathan Drouin, and he's been great this year. And if you bring him back, I don't know if they have enough money for that. But yeah, you're right. You eat a couple, you know, you eat the contract, and that could be a good trade for both teams.
Yeah, I mean, it depends, too. I mean, as we heard from Greg Wyshynski earlier on, Justus Annanen is a 24-year-old in their system that they drafted. He's a Finnish goaltender. He's 6'4". They've got a lot of faith in him, and he signed up the next couple years at under $1 million. They got him on a 2-year extension now that kicks in next year at $837,000. So if he can turn into as good as Georgiev or better, then, you know, the Colorado Avalanche probably stay out of that conversation. But yeah, I think LA remains an interesting one. Again, I still think Toronto and would like to have a guy like Jacob Markstrom, New Jersey. I can't see why they still wouldn't be in that conversation. The playoffs can open up a lot of those doors. We have to wait and see what happens in a lot of these. But yeah, if a top team, I don't think like Vegas is suddenly going to be interested in it, but if most of these teams, with the exception of the ones that I named, are here because they have a star goaltender already, right? Like,
there are some teams that have, like, I mean, yeah, Hellebuck wasn't great, but you look at Winnipeg with Hellebuck and Dallas with Ottinger, and the Bruins have, like we talked about earlier, two solid, solid number one goalies. Like, that can take you through the playoffs. In itself, you can win every game 2-1 if you've got a goalie playing that well, and all of a sudden you're in the Stanley Cup final. Like, it's on the other side, you see what happens when you try and throw a young goalie in or someone that doesn't have a lot of playoff experience, and we've seen it with Stuart Skinner in Edmonton. It's goaltending becomes so critical in the playoffs, and I just don't think you can get by with a goalie that clearly isn't working for you. Now, then again, Vegas won last year with Aiden Hill, which blew my mind, but he clearly proved that that wasn't a one-year thing. He had another good year.
We continue to get these in, and I think this will be a summertime, springtime consistency. We haven't mentioned much of the Flames on this Monday show. We haven't mentioned much of the draft, and a text comes in and just says, if the Flames get the 9th pick, they better pick again, La. Just a reminder to everybody out there. Yes, Tejas Ginla, if you've missed it, he is a upcoming prospect in the draft, and you might not know this, Shane. He's Jerome's son.
No kidding.
Yeah, that same guy. This is his kid.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
And the Flames could draft him?
Potentially.
Well, that's a perfect story where they should do it. I don't even care who else is in the draft.
I don't know about that.
The Ilya Bryzgalov's son is in the draft. I think the Flyers should take him in the first round.
Is he actually?
Yeah, he's the goalie. He's like 6th round projected, but there's him. There's a guy. There's a guy in this draft named Miroslav Shatan. Shatan, is that how you say it?
Satan?
Satan? I thought it was Shatan.
I thought it was Satan.
Well, it's probably not that. But whichever one, it's the same spelling.
Mm.
I don't know if there's any relation. It's just a lot of fun names now.
Again, the thing, and I'll bring it up just to bring it up in passing. I have the same opinion I've had of it since the start, that the Flames do not need to go out of their way to draft Tiege Ginla.
No.
They don't need to go out of their way to draft anybody, regardless of last name. They need to pick the best player available, regardless. I don't care if it's a defenseman, goalie. It's not a goalie. Any number of forwards, center, iceman. Yes, the Ginla name is great in this town. I don't worry necessarily about the pressure of it. If he's the best player available at 8 or 9, whenever they pick, great. And he's a Flame, fantastic. But if it doesn't work out, if he's off the board, then if they have him 12th on their list and their 10th best guy is available, then take 10. It's just as simple as that for me. And again, I'm not going out of my way to not draft him. Again, if he's the best available player for me, then for sure. But just because he's an Ginla and it's in the city of Calgary, does Craig Conroy have to go out and make that happen in my mind? No. His job is to make the Flames a winner and to make them a consistent winner. And that comes with drafting the best available player, regardless of feeling or legacy or anything else that comes with it. And I would probably argue Jerome probably feels the same way.
Yeah.
Right? So that's how I think. I don't think Jerome would worry about Tiege being drafted in Calgary, but at the same time, there's been plenty of father-son pairings and brothers, and if it works out and somehow Tiege is in Calgary, great. That means the Flames picked the best available player in my mind. So Derek in Red Deer says, who would you guys rather have, a Ginla or Yakimchuk? Whoever they project to be a better long-term fit. That's my honest answer, Derek. Whoever's the better fit. I think they have needs at both sides. I know they've added a lot of young defensemen, but until they haven't proven, like Brustevich is great, Grishnikov is fun, Yoni Yermo, for sure, all interesting prospects, but none proven at the NHL level. Yakimchuk's a hell of a player. I watched him a ton with the Hitmen this season. He's physical. He's involved in the play. He's got a great shot on him. It would be a great pick for the Flames if he's there. But again, whether it's him, Tiege Ginla, Berkeley, Lidstrom, whoever you want to put, if whoever the best person is there, that's the one. So both of them great, both with Calgary connections, but neither one, you know, in my mind, vastly ahead of the other. They're right around the same ranking anyways, depending on who you follow for that sort of thing.
You know, like you mentioned, best player available and I guess also what the team needs. But, you know, when you're in a retool like this, pretty much you need everything. So, and like talking about the pressure that comes with being Jerome McGinley's son and playing in Calgary, like that absolutely could motivate him and make him. So, you know, even if you stretch and take him a couple of picks higher than you want to, that added thing could be beneficial for him. But at the same time, maybe that's not him. And it really just depends on the player. So, yeah, I know the story would be so cool. And I honestly, I do hope it happens. It would be great. But it's just, I just don't want to see them reach. That's it. And I don't think that's what Conroy would do. I think he's mentioned that too, is that best player available. But, you know, if the Flames feel that they don't need a defenseman with this top pick, I think Ginla could be that guy.
Nate from Calgary, what's to say Tiege wants to play where his dad did? That's a lot of pressure he might not want as well.
It's also true.
It's interesting. And I mean, you know, for Tiege, that's an interesting conversation to have in those pre-draft interviews, because I think you want honesty. Because the hard part about that is I don't think any kid in that kind of spot, regardless if it's Calgary or not, says, yeah, I don't want to play there. Right, I mean that's where you've really got to hammer down on, you know, getting as much honesty out of people as you can, and that's hard because what's Tiege supposed to say? He goes into a pre-draft interview with Calgary and says, "Yeah, I don't want to play for your team." That's not a good look for a youngster anyways.
No, not at
all. So, plenty of people on the other side of this, too. Brian says, if TJ Ginla is available when you pick him and no one else. Conroy's job is to make the team better, so you do it. Again, what if they feel there is a better player than TJ Ginla?
Like, Berkeley Catton had 53 goals this year.
Yeah, and like, and I'm not downing on Tej. Again, if Tej was the best available player when Absolutely. They pick him, he's been lights out in the WHL playoffs. He had a great regular season. He put up better numbers than his dad did in the dub. That doesn't mean he's the same player. That doesn't mean he'll have the same career in Calgary. And it also doesn't mean he's the best player that when the Flames are going to be there. That's in my mind. Baby Iggy's the best choice. Flames fans will break the internet if this happens.
Yeah, for sure.
I can tell you that the Flames store would be really happy if that happened. They would sell a hell of a lot of merchandise.
I think they'd build the new arena and like.
Do they unretire 12 and let them wear 12?
I think they let him wear 24.
I think they let him wear 21.
Oh, okay.
Flip it around.
And then what number does Joe Ginla get when the Flames draft him in a couple years?
Whatever he wants.
Okay, that's true.
Big Mike says, Logan Chan, if you ain't first, Celebrini, you're last. A Ginla all damn day. There's a subsection, man, I tell you, that only wants Tej and is going to be mad if it's not.
And like, I get
if
it.
If Celebrini fell to 9 and A Ginla was there and they took Celebrini instead of A Ginla, there's a subsection of the base that would be very upset.
That's actually true.
It's going to be interesting to see. And it's not the first time we're going to talk about this. It's not the first time we have talked about it. It won't be the last time either. Draft's still a long way away. We're only in night 3 of Stanley Cup playoff action, Chan.
Best time of the year.
All of that's got to happen before we get anywhere close to the draft. But you know we'll have this conversation. Appreciate you guys on the text line. That puts a wrap on the show for this Monday. It's been a busy one. Greg Wyshynski joined us, chatting all things NHL playoffs. Also dove into it with Sho Ali, ahead of the Jays, kicking off a series with the Kansas City Royals on Monday night. If you missed any of it, you can check us out on the podcast, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. Again, it all kicks off at 5 o'clock tonight with the Leafs and the Bruins. William Nylander status still up in the air. Islanders and Hurricanes game 2. Zheji Pageau is likely to play for New York. Mark Stone good to go for the Vegas Golden Knights in their matchup with the Stars at 7:30. And Kane in for Edmonton, Grundstrom in for the LA Kings as they kick off their series from Edmonton at 8 o'clock tonight. We'll be back tomorrow to break it all down and get you set for night 4 of the playoffs. But for Shan Vergie, for Cam Hughes, for Greg the intern, thank you from all of us here at Sportsnet 960 for tuning in. We appreciate it.